Thank you for listening to the Black and Gold Hockey Podcast. Please support the show by subscribing to and leaving a 5-star rating for the show on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Podbean, SoundCloud, Spotify, Stitcher, and any of your favorite podcast platforms. You can also support the show by going to our website, blackandgoldhockey.com, where there's always exciting articles by the BNG writing staff. While you're there, don't forget to click on the fanatics.com banner for a great sports fan shopping experience.
Are you done yet? We gotta start the show.
Bobby Orr, behind the net, the center, and Orr! Bobby Orr! Scores in the Boston Bruins!
30 seconds left in the period. The Bruins are shorthanded. Ray Bourque.
From the face-off circle to the right of Reggie Whitman, flying it down, and Whitmore blew it.
Did he ever?
Marshall to Bergeron on the drive, save, rebound, he's loose. Sagan kicks him loose. Bergeron scores.
Hello and welcome to the Black and Gold Hockey Podcast. It is November 29th, 2020. This is episode 205. Unfortunately, Matt Barry's not here with us. We hope he feels better, but I'm me, Heather Ringerson, and across from me on my computer screen and the town is Mark Allred. How you doing, Mark?
What up, what up? A little Ryan Whitney entrance right there, stolen. I know it's copywritten for the Spit and Chicklets guys, but I need it today. I am absolutely super stoked for this episode. Missing Matt Barry. Hope he feels better. It was 11th hour kind of sickness. I completely understand. We are all human, but we will continue going on with the weekly episodes. But this one, folks, is probably one that I'm really looking forward to because it brings back a lot of childhood memories for me. We have Trent Buehler, the guy who made the bubble hockey or slash table hockey Boston Garden model game. It's unbelievable. The interview was awesome. The YouTube viewers are going to really enjoy it because they're going to actually see pictures of this thing. This is unbelievable. The audio listeners, please go to YouTube, Black and Gold Hockey Podcast on YouTube. We have our own channel. You'll be able to see this madness happen and so on. So I'm super stoked. And plus, we have a lot of good Bruins topics to discuss. So I mean, we're looking probably at a good hour and a half, maybe 2-hour program. Who's doing 2-hour programs during the off season? Nobody. One podcast is not even around anymore. So it's unbelievable. So anyway, I'm glad I'm here. I'm glad everybody else is, and I hope everybody else is safe and healthy as numbers get, you know, rising and so on. And there's a lot of news. So we got to get right at it. So Heather, lead the way.
Okay. Well, firstly, I know we're going to give a shout out to BetOnline.ag in a minute, but I just wanted to piggyback on you and say I hope everyone had a great Thanksgiving, those of us in the States. And we obviously hope everyone out there listening and everywhere is safe and as healthy as they can be. But that being said, as always, BetOnline is our show sponsor. And Mark, take it away.
NFL football continues this week, which has a few surprise teams at the top of the standings, and you might not be at the game this year, but you can still be in on the action at betonline.ag. No matter how the schedules change or players that play, betonline.ag is going the extra mile to make sure you get in on every game this season with the fastest updated odds in the industry. There are always more options to wager than anywhere else. Head over to betonline.ag today and take advantage of all the great mid-season bonuses, offers, and contests. And please don't forget to use promo code CLNS50. That's CLNS50. Betonline.ag, your online wagering experts.
All right. Well, we'd just like to start off by not a big
Big deal for Brandon Carlo, turned 24 this week, and we just were reflecting on, man, the kids grow up. It seems just the other day you were a little young pup over there, Zdeno Chara, under his little wing, but now he's all grown up. I believe he got engaged a couple months ago or something like that, so happy birthday, Brandon Carlo. We just wanted to say that.
Absolutely. And happy birthday to Brandon Carlo, a player that when he was drafted in the second round, I'm not quite sure what year that was, but he was out playing in Tri-City in the Western Hockey League, and I was watching a ton of games out there of his. Even back then, I thought he got too many penalties, but it's really good that he came in right out of the dub and right into the NHL, and in my opinion, has really risen up the ranks of the Boston Bruins defense, as in trust and so on, as a good player, good shutdown guy, So happy birthday to him, and hopefully that this continues, because he's definitely showing, as he gets older, continued leadership skills. So that's always a positive thing, and it reflects down from above. I mean, Zdeno Chara was his understudy?
He was Zdeno Chara's understudy.
Okay, so you know my
no
dyslexia.
No one's under Zdeno Chara. Yeah. He's the king.
Right, so you know what I meant, and hopefully others followed my fumble, but No, I mean it's just a staple of how this organization has been when it comes down to, tutelage from above. So, yeah. All good. Happy birthday, sir.
Yeah, and they're the veterans now, so we'll see what him and Charlie and them can do. Now that they are our veteran decor, it's crazy to think. All right, so happy birthday. One more time, Brandon Carlo. Okay, another big thing for our young kids, the 2015 draft. As you said, Jake DeBrusk, hello, got a contract. Yes?
Yeah.
Excited? Were you excited?
I was very excited. I'm a huge Jake DeBrusk fan, and I was also one that is able to, not allow, because it's my organization or anything like that, but as a personal opinion, allow him to, like, get another deal and prove it. I don't think that a lot of the judgment that Bruins fans and inconsistencies and so on, you know, it just doesn't hold water to me, because he just came out of an entry level deal, which these kids are still learning. They're in the process of continued development. Believe it or not, you are playing the NHL, but you're young enough that your development is still continuing. So I didn't want to give up on him, and neither did the Bruins, and I'm happy about that, because maybe, you know, he can get a little consistency, instead of going so wide to the net, more in the middle and go at the player. And he said he's going to bulk up. He's going to put on some weight. He's going to be more involved in physical action. It remains to be seen. But these are all positive things that you want to hear from a player that's coming back to the team. And I'll be honest, you know, I'm a fence guy. If he doesn't freaking work out after year one, you still have a year of term left that can be a trade asset to another team. So it's not like you're going in and by the way, keep in mind, restricted free agent. I think he's going to be an RFA again, but it will have, what do you call it? Arbitration rights to go along. So that another team that Boston might be trading for might see that, but that year of term in a trade is valuable, because it gives another team an opportunity to talk to Jake for a whole season for another big year and a long-term contract that he might get. What I do like about it, I'm sorry to go ramble on, Heather. What I do like about this whole thing is the fact that Don Sweeney sat down with him or whatever, an agent or Zoom calls that we're doing right now, and basically said, listen, Jake, we want you to stick around, but we need you to work on the money and terms. So let's do a 2-year with all the shit that's going on with this pandemic, and then we'll revisit it after 2 years, and we'll try to get you what you need when we have a little more capability on the cap. I believe in 2 years you're going to have more than $50 million in cap space. That's just a projection as of right now. So there are opportunities for him to sign long term if he proves it. If not, I can see him as a trade asset.
So I'm like you. I like Jake DeBrusk. I'm glad we re-signed him. I thought he was going to get about the same amount for three, but I understand also with financially. We all agreed he was not worth $5, $6 million. Someone told you that. It wasn't true. Do we think maybe your next contract, if everything works out business-wise and you do, like, you finish growing into yourself and clean up some of these, like, please stay on your... He gets so excited sometimes. I'm just like, stay on your feet, Jake. Because when he is clicking, he's like a crazy little... you know, bee just buzzing everywhere.
A little water bug.
But yeah, so he's getting what, 3.675, something like that for 2 years, which is good bridge for him. And yeah, I mean, at that point, I would argue all of them from this draft class needs to either be here forever or you need to go so we can get new blood in. But that being said, I love Jake DeBrusk. I'm happy. I would prefer if they kept him up with Krejci because I feel like he is good with Krejci. And I know that some of it is his issue too, you know what I mean? But I think Krejci is the kind of center that Jake DeBrusk can need if we can just kind of reel. If we could reel him back to Krejci's kind of methodical, fast but slow pace, like if we can get that into Jake DeBrusk and finish that, you know, like that whole thought process to be able to slow it down and speed it up all at the same time. And we get them a right winger. I'm talking, that's going to be great. We won't just have one line. We'll have at least two solid lines as we should. And our third line's looking mint and our fourth line's not so bad. So
yeah, I think that even if Bruce Cassidy wanted to go with my idea, which would probably be crazy for everybody else, but how would Jake DeBrusk play the next year or two with Patrice Bergeron as a second line center? And, you know, and possibly a David Krejci at the front of the pack this upcoming year. Probably won't happen because we know Bruce and how tight he is with those three up top. But, you know, you could see something different. You know, Jake could have a new partner in crime and really spark his development in that second contract that he's got recently this week to really get the best out of him because he sees how Bergeron works all the time. And Krejci's not a slouch. I'm not saying that at all. But the inspiration, like, of young players to Patrice Bergeron, this guy's like a practical god, you know what I mean? He's like the best two-way player in the league, in my opinion, regardless of this Selke trophy that went to a very deserving Philadelphia Flyer.
Sean Couturier. So I can't say it, but, that's all right. You know, Sean.
So, there's so much potential right here to do with Jake. You can move him around. His versatility is all right. And if things don't work out, he can automatically go. I'm not automatically, but he could be slotted down to the third line too, and still be a productive player next to Coyle and possibly Craig Smith if Smith's not moved up to the second line. Akasha moved down to the right side on the third. So there's like so many possibilities.
Also, we still have the Seattle draft coming, so that'll be a whole interesting thing. That's true. I didn't really look into it. I'm interested because there are all these different rules about protecting. You got the seven players or whatever, but then there's all these things with your contract, RFA this, and that, if you're in your first 2 minutes. So, like, the Bruins could technically re-sign, Tuukka on the last day before the draft or whatever, protect, you know, if they hadn't protected. I don't know. There's all these rules, but we'll have to look in that when we get closer to that. But I think this is definitely – all I would like is that they I'm not saying that players shouldn't be versatile. But unlike Anders Bjork and them, you have specifically had this kid playing left wing for the last 4 years. So my only request is that we at least keep him on the left side unless there's an emergency and make sure Kasha and Smith or whoever, Sidney, whoever ends up on the right, but leave Jake on the left because that is where he's been playing like since, you know, his window of let's let him be more, you know, not all players are always diverse like that. Like a David Backes, who their whole career play wherever you need them to within a line. Jake DeBrusk, just leave him on the left side. I prefer the second, you know, maybe at least the first year of this contract with Krejci's last year. Because what does Krejci got to do? Get a new right wing and a new left wing? I mean, it might do wonders. Or like even if you flip him and Bert. But I'm saying if you're going to do that, flip him, like you said, with Krejci and Bergeron. So at least he's playing with Pastrnak and Marchand if they ever come back. You know, I'm just kidding. When they come back, I meant when hockey comes back. I know they're coming back. I didn't mean it that way. So that's my only request for Jake DeBrusk, but I'm glad to have him back because I do like Jake DeBrusk.
One of we're talking about David Krejci a couple times, and it brought me to a topic that we should just, I mean, it is a topic we should discuss, but not a whole agenda item. But real quick, one of my favorite YouTubers, Top Shelf Hockey, shared a video last night or yesterday and mentioned David Krejci and how he's possibly hearing that there could be contract negotiations for an extension sometime this offseason or the upcoming season to keep him for at least 2 to 3 years, citing the possibility that the Bruins do not believe that their center depth is that strong, particularly in the minor pros and prospects. So, I mean, Sadika is your top prospect and a center, so I'm not sure if I totally agree with that, but I kind of do agree that they might want to keep a player like David around, so that's just a possibility. But it's just, at this point, it's just rumors, but it you know, I like that guy and the grind that he does to get his information out there, and it's a good possibility that happens if he doesn't want to retire and go back to his home country.
Bergeron, he has next year and the year after left.
Let me pull up.
Can you look that up for me real quick? Because yep. I was thinking, David Krejci definitely has been in the culture. So if he gets an extension, he is definitely going to know what he's worth versus what he's worth to the Bruins.
He won't get 7-2. He will not.
That's what
get
I mean. Is that I just mean that he's been in this culture, so he understands that he's not asking for that. Probably his next contract. He may ask for 5 for one more year, and that might bring him to an end with Tuukka. And I mean, well, assuming we'd extend Tuukka if he still wants to play. But I think for David Krejci, it's either play another season or two here and then go home, or he's just going to be done if he does. I don't feel like David Krejci probably is so committed to still having to play in the NHL because he's accomplished what, you know, enough for a career, you know. Ooh. To not go back to. If he really wants to, he might just retire. If him and the Bruins can't come to a thing, he might go home for a little while, play there, and come back and coach someday. But I hope he's still around. I bet he gets at least a year or two.
David,
that's it. What's all the ooh?
David Krejci. Oh, I didn't know this. David Krejci has one more year. I knew that.
Yeah.
Patrice Bergeron has the 2021 and 21-22 season left. I thought it was 3 years. But it's two.
Right. It's 2 years, right? Yeah. So it could be a
And then Charlie Coyle goes all the way out to 25, 26, and he's the longest current contract right now. Yeah. Yes.
And Brad Marchand and Pasternak both have a few more years. I know, like, Brad Marchand's locked up for a few, and so, which is fine. It goes for, like, huh?
Where's Brad? Oh, he's already on injured reserve.
Well, yeah, because they
So is Kevin Miller.
Yeah.
All right, so there's Pasternak. Okay, so Marchand goes out to 24-25, so Coyle's still in the lead with contract length.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of, like, money-wise. But I think David Krejci, he'll, you know, not to get off topic with DeBrusk, but I think he'll probably at least do 1 year. Don't if Bergeron decides to call it a career, which he probably will just because of his body. It's not, you know, He's been through a lot. He's a Superman. He might just want to go home and be with the kids and his wife for a little bit, you know?
True that.
If anything, I bet Krejci does one more year and finishes out with Bergie. It's only right, you know? All right. Well, that being said, speaking of retirement, that was actually inadvertently an excellent jump to the next topic. We have to give our accolades to Johnny Boychuk, who was forced into retirement not on his own terms due to an injury to his eye. The Islanders released a statement, I don't know, 4 days ago or something. But anyways, I would be remiss if we did not give Johnny Boy, who was one of the original salary cap casualties of this team, I would argue. So I personally would like to say thank you, Mr. Boychuk, for your service here, just generally being a stand-up human being and all your dedication to our organization and the Islanders. And I was sad to see you go, and I'm sad you have to go out this way, but you had a hell of a career, and even though it's not your terms, you should be proud of what you did. So I don't want to get sad because I'm getting sad again. So, Mark, go.
Oh, you're so sad. the Boychuk talk is something, it's sad. I mean, it sucks, and it shouldn't have ended like that, but taking a skate to the face and getting an eye injury and not being able to use that vision is a tough way to get out of the game. But you have to give him kudos for his career, especially as a young pro. Mark Diver on Twitter tweeted this out, that Boychuk played for 5 NHL teams. I'm sorry, AHL teams before coming, Providence was his fifth team. And then with Providence, got so noticed that the Boston Bruins could not hold him back and then brought him up. And then the history is all written from there. But just a hard worker to get to his dream of you know, sustainability in the NHL. So 2011 Stanley Cup champ, you know, that's something to be certainly proud of. But solid worker, a solid hitter. This is the type of guy that brought me back to the memories of Ray Bourque and how he could like tuck that that hip so low and just come in and just drive somebody into the boards with a very clean freaking hip check or body check or whatever. But he did not get penalized a lot for his hitting. So just a standout career, standout person, and it sucks that he had to go. And it's like that cap casualty. And a lot of folks don't understand this, that PC did not just trade him for two second-round picks. He was a cap casualty, which meant they were hanging on to Mark Savard's $5 million, which you can go over 10% during the offseason, but you have to be cap compliant 48 hours before the season starts. That's exactly when Johnny Boychuk got traded. It was because they needed to be cap compliant, and PC had to rush, so... There could have been other ones that could have gone too, but for that price and those picks, I think that was the best offer that the Bruins got. The Bruins were in a corner on this one. It's like we'd either do this or do that, you know, so.
Yeah, that was definitely a, you know how I feel about the Chia Pet, but that was definitely a, we're in a pickle here with the budget and it sucks. And well,
I mean, look at Chicago. Look what Chicago had to do with their cap casualties. They lost Antti Pernarin. They lost Taro Teravainen. It's like, I mean, it sucks.
Yeah, it happens. But it just is sad that it had to go out this way. But and also, it's been really nice seeing all the other players send him wishes and stuff like that. So
absolutely,
you're well loved. You will be missed. And just because you can't play anymore doesn't mean you won't find a place to still be a part of hockey somewhere. You know, we are, sure. You know, you need coaches, you need teachers, you need people who have been there, done that to create the next generations, you know? So speaking of a guy that feels like he's been around for a generation, he nearly has, is Zdeno Chara, who is not officially the captain or signed to our team, but as always, as the Bruins do, and not just because they have to, they are stand-up humans, and Chara did, as he always does, delivers tasty pies around for Thanksgiving. And this dude is like unbelievable. He just not even, he still showed up because he said he would show up and he did, you know, and not a lot of people are like that generally. And it's just another way to just, whether you love or hate Chara as an actual defenseman, you cannot not like Zdeno Chara as a human being. He's a beast. He's a kind human being. He's just awesome. And I really hope he comes back at least one more year because I don't want him to have to retire like that. Yeah. Sorry, go.
Yeah, no, I understand that. And a lot of fans have brought that up too. It's just, this is a real tough way for him to walk away from the game. But third straight year of delivering Mike's pastries or Mike's cakes, whatever, Mike's pies. It's really cool. I think he took over for that when I believe Matt Bolesky was here. So he's been doing it on his own. And like you said, not doing it under contract. So that just shows how much of a class act that guy is and a true leader and so on. So hats off to him. And, you know, obviously it went to a good cause to feed the needy. I'm pretty sure that that's what it was all about, correct?
Yeah, to make sure that people who can't have pie on their own get some pie. And
exactly.
Get to share in the...
And especially those pies are so good. Yeah. But I also, this was my addition to the agenda. I also wanted to propose an answer to what we're talking about with Zdeno Chara and the pies and Thanksgiving and just being a class act. But I also wanted to say the retro jerseys came out and they are selling retro jerseys that have lettering on them that say Zdeno Chara. Now, a lot of people are thinking that, oh, he's definitely coming back because they're making a jersey for him. I just wanted your thoughts on that because I don't believe that that's the case. I don't think that they'd make jerseys. I mean, Zdeno Chara is going to be selling jerseys like Ray Bourque sold jerseys. You know what I mean? I have a Bourque jersey. He doesn't play. So it's still a thing that people buy because it's his nostalgia. It's the history. It's so on. Just because he's getting a jersey doesn't automatically come back and say he's going to be on the team. I just absolutely hate that. I hate when people just say, listen, Chara did say in his season ending or year ending press conference, he'd like to be back. He wants to keep going. He feels he has the ability to keep going. That's fine and great. People take that and they're like, you know, straightforward. They're like, this is what he said. He says he's coming back. He's automatically coming back. No, you still have to deal with the management and so on. People just don't understand that.
Yeah, I think he's a 43-year-old man or so that has to have a conversation with his wife and family, enjoy some downtime, let his like Jumbo Joe's out there still skating or whatever he's doing on one of his favorite places to go when the NHL is not playing as scheduled, you know, yeah, and maybe Chara's just being a dad and doing his thing and he's doing his crazy workouts on his own and he'll start skating soon enough and then he'll worry about negotiating. I think Matt's spot on to that. Whether Chara signs here, anywhere else, or just retires is on Zdeno Chara. But that's what I thought both ways was, I'm like, well, I don't really think just because the name's on. I mean, I could order one that says Ingerson on the back. It doesn't make, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
So they might have just had Chara's name because, like you said, he's marketable. Because I was thinking, because he's still here, he's not quite like a Ray Bourque or an O'Reilly or something. But I was thinking that, though, his jersey, once Chara isn't here anymore, his popularity here is going to just keep skyrocketing because even though he is loved here, he is beloved here. I mean, there are people who, again, argue maybe with him on the ice, but no one's arguing with him as a human, as a captain, as like a stand-up dude that helped change actually culture. You know, we're talking about changing hockey culture so much this year and the last year. And he's a dude that did some of those things that people always talk about. Everyone gets treated the same. I mean, yeah, sure, some of that's fine, but he changed the way that you razz the other guys and stuff like that. Instead of it being denigrating or whatever, he made it so, no, like, I might be 6'10" and you might be a rookie and I might have the C and you might not, but in this room, we are all equal because we are a team. And I think that inspires other people who have those same kind of skills to change it in their locker rooms. And before you know it, that's how we really change culture in the NHL. That's all I'm saying. He's a solid dude. But then I'm like, I don't think he's quite ready to be like the classic, you know, when you're like, oh, I really love Cheevers kind of jersey. Like, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, he'll get there though. He's going to keep making money as a Boston Bruin forever and ever. And once a Bruin, always a Bruin. But yeah,
Speaking of cheesy, I got a jersey signed from Jerry Cheevers.
Move it a little closer for the YouTube friends.
No, I'll put up a picture.
Okay, yeah. So that's for the Patreon. Good things happening over there.
Talk about that later.
Yeah. All right, well, we're going to head over to our interview with Mr. Trent Buehler, who was nice enough to give us some time, even though he is 3 hours behind us. He's up and gave us some time, and we got to bond as Bruins fans a little bit. So thank you, and Mark.
Yeah, I'm pumped for this upcoming interview, and I hope everybody is too. We had such a great talk. So we're going to talk to him, and then we're going to hear from the great folks at the storenextdoor.ca. It's still before Christmas, so please support those guys up there. They're a great Yarmouth, Nova Scotia-based company doing great things for great people. Well, we'll hear from them after that, and we'll be back talking. But here is the interview with Trent Buehler, the originator of the old Boston Garden table hockey game. So please enjoy. And if you're not on YouTube and you're not following us on YouTube, you're not going to see these pictures because it's outstanding work. But here's the interview with Trent. We'll be right back. Hey, Bruins fans. As mentioned in the beginning of the program, we do have a very special guest this morning. And he's calling in on Zoom from Edmonton, Alberta. And he is the creator of the old, original Boston Garden table hockey game. His name is Trent Buehler. Trent Buehler, welcome to the Black and Gold Hockey Podcast, bud.
Hey, thank you for having me. This is awesome.
Yeah, dude, I was so pumped that we could, we talked a couple days ago, we got a schedule down, and you committed, and that we locked it in, and I'm super stoked to have you on, man.
Awesome.
All right, so I'll just start off with the questions. Let's go back to, you know, did you grow up in Edmonton?
No, actually, I was born in Saskatchewan, and I grew up in Calgary, and I think I've been in Edmonton for about 30 years now, maybe.
Nice.
In 1990.
And what do you do for occupation?
Currently, I work in a machine shop. I'm a quality manager, which is why I have such a crazy attention to detail, I guess.
That's awesome. And one more question for me real quick. Being so far away, either in Saskatchewan or in Alberta, what was the drive to be a Boston Bruins fan?
Bobby Orr. Ever since I was little, loved Bobby Orr, and the Bruins have just always been my team because I moved around so much. And, you know, there wasn't a Calgary Flames or an Edmonton Oilers when I was a kid, so the Bruins are my team, and they still are.
That's awesome. Go ahead, Heather.
Yeah, that's interesting. A lot of people say that in cities, you know, that now we just think always had teams there and they really didn't. So a lot of people fall back on the original six, and we're glad that you came with our tribe. Awesome. I guess, well, Mark asked, you know, thing, but I was wondering just basically with how beautiful your craftsmanship is this a talent you've always had, like working with your hands, creating like, you know, craftsmanship, you know, it's not like typical fine arts, but maybe that's something you can do too, where you got natural talent with your hands and creative mind.
Yeah, I guess I've had a ton of jobs in my lifetime, and I've done lots of stuff with my hands. I actually worked at a dental lab making teeth for many years, very small little tools and stuff. And I've always kind of drawn or painted, and I've always made things. And this is actually, I think, the fourth table hockey game I built. The other ones were not anywhere near as elaborate, but this is the big one.
So you must have loved that game as a kid, table hockey.
I love table hockey. I love old toys, especially old mechanical toys that work, you know, tin stuff, you know, just things they don't make anymore, right? Mm-hmm. I've always been a huge fan of that stuff. So and I collect table hockey games. I've got a whole mess of them that I'm storing as well. So that's my thing.
That's awesome. So the table hockey generally is just a passion of yours. And we're just lucky enough you're also a Bruins fan. So we got
exactly. That's right. Managed to bring it all together.
That's awesome.
Trent, let me ask you, where did the base start in this project of the old Boston Garden? Did it start from an original game, or did you build the slide and the whole table itself?
The whole thing. The only thing I didn't build is the actual players on the ice. I made the guys on the benches, but the players on the ice are actually from a game that was made in the late 70s, early 80s by Coleco. It was called the Coleco Game Room. And they're 3D, and I really like them. They're like super detailed. They got different positions. And over the last like 25 years or so, whenever I see them, I buy them. You know, they're pretty rare, but you know, if I'm at an antiques mall or something and I see a stock, I grab them all. So I've got about 23 teams, I think, just waiting to be painted.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah. And what other stadiums did you do?
This is the only complete stadium I've done. While I was working on this, I had a couple other guys ask me if I would just build, you know, sections of seats. So I did four of those. I think I did two other, Boston Garden ones, just the Loge sections, maybe like, 36 inches long. I think it was about five sections of seats, three rows. And then I did about the same size again, the Wells Fargo Center, Philadelphia. And then, I just finished a Chicago Stadium as well.
Yeah, I saw that. That was amazing.
Yeah, that was a fun one, actually.
Yeah, awesome. I was going to say that you had mentioned, well, at least in the interview I saw with you, that probably old Toronto Leafs, you know, the Maple Leafs Garden would be your next adventure if you do, you know, if you have another 2 years and you want to make something that would make other hockey fans very happy. So I was wondering, were there any other, either current or obviously older arenas and gardens that we don't have with us anymore that you would take on if after Toronto, what would you do?
Oh, absolutely. Like I've been to the Forum. I saw a game in about 91. And I mean, like growing up in Canada, Hockey Night in Canada was what we did every Saturday night on TV. And it was either from Toronto or from Montreal. So like, just, I remember seeing it on TV and like the Forum, it was like, you know, just the atmosphere. It was like a darker building. It had the blue kick plate on the boards. I really loved it. Really dark red first row and stuff. So that's another one I would like to do. Chicago Stadium. I just really love the old buildings, you know, the character. You can't beat it, you know?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just wanted to ask, because, I mean, as someone who has a talent for these kind of things, and you obviously have a passion for this particular, like, table hockey, restoration or whatever, trying to build your own. I'm wondering what was probably your most challenging or frustrating part of it. And besides completing it, what was your most satisfying? Like what part was like, yes, you couldn't get it. And then you did.
Oh, there's been so many moments like that. Cause I started it with no plans, none. I didn't draw anything up. I didn't do anything. I thought about doing this for honestly about 10 years. It was in my head. I was thinking about it. I was like, I wonder if it's even possible. You know, you start getting something that's this long and you've got seats behind the net and stuff. Now your rods are getting really long. And so I didn't even know if it would actually work. And so the entire time I've been building, like it's been 2 years since I started. I don't work on it all the time. It's just something that's up in my shop that I go play around with it when I have some time. So it's really was just a matter of I would do something and I would start building it. And then I would say that doesn't look right. And I would scrap it and then I would start. So I probably could have been done, I don't know, half a year ago, maybe longer. But I just kept doing it. But I spared no expense. I mean, I cut every individual pane of glass that goes around the rink. You know, I made the stanchions between the glass. Probably the trickiest part and the most satisfying once I got it done was just figuring out how to do the corners around the, you know, the ends of the rink with the seats because there's so many angles. It was like, you know, my brain was, ugh.
And that's actually something that Heather brought up in the last week's podcast. We were talking about the time when the Boston Bruins first played the game at the Boston Garden was those uneven structures or areas of the rink because it was constantly a wraparound kind of walkway. Yeah. So you had to basically build it. Well, let's just put it this way: the technology back in the day wasn't so good, so they had to like build everything that went along with angles. But the way you did it just brought it back so good. And what I really loved about it was your finished product and the way you got your camera into like the obstructed views, because where my old man used to buy tickets all the time, and then we'd sit there for like a minute or two to see if we can actually see the game, and then go up to the gallery gods and hang out up there.
Right. Well, that's the funny thing about it. Like, I built it so it can be, because it's so big, I made it so it could be taken apart easily in case I wanted to take it somewhere or do something with it, or if I have to move someday, right? And that shot was just an accident a couple of weeks ago. I had one of the panels off, and I was turning around, and I looked back, and I went, oh, look at that. I got to get a picture of that.
Right? Nice. Really,
you know, it worked. Yeah.
That was one of the things I wanted to say to you is that I'm sorry that you didn't get to go. Well, so I have a question, but also just a comment. I'm sorry you didn't get to go to the garden because really the only thing, like Mark, he's saying about the seats, like I remember even as a kid, the only thing that kept me not falling down was the sticky stairs from all the beer on the ground and peanuts and whatnot. But it, honest to God, when I saw your creation, I could feel myself. And I know you had said it, you know, it's not perfect. Of course, it's not going to be perfect. You know what I mean? But what you did in itself is miracle work. And I'm sure you'll probably tinker as you go, you know. But I was wondering if you could have been at the garden, right? Because all I could think is, oh, I remember watching wrestling there. And that's where I sat with my first Marty Brodeur game. Shout out to Mark because he brought me. Anything, you know. So what? Is there any moment or game or, I mean, I guess a couple, you know, that you wish that you could have gone to the garden to experience?
Oh, I don't know about any particular game. I just wish I could have made it there. I didn't travel a lot when I was young, you know, so I never, by the time I went to Boston, I think it was 2001. And, you know, I'd missed it by, 6 years at that point, I guess. I don't know. Plenty of games. Yeah, I don't know. I can't pick one. Sorry.
That's fine. I didn't mean to stump you.
Oh, really, it's all good.
And you're forgiven because you grew up 2,500 miles away or something. It's not like you grew up in Buffalo and there's an excuse.
That's the only time I made it to Boston, too. I was living in Toronto for a couple of years, and I drove down just to go to Fenway to see a ball game.
Nice.
You know, and that was the only time I got to make it there.
That's awesome.
Exactly. Yes.
Oh, geez. I got so many. Building that structure. I mean, it is a structure, and it's a work of art, in my opinion. But and being where you're from for 30 years, did you ever really just keep thinking as you're working along about the 1987-88 season and the 1989-90 season, particularly in those playoffs when the Edmonton Oilers and Boston Bruins did battle, the lights went out. And could you put an outage at this garden? And fog. You got to do the fog.
I know. I get asked that all the time. You know, it's like, oh, do the lights go on all the time? Right? So that's the thing. Like, this is the crazy thing. It's still not even finished yet, right? Like, this just kind of blew up on me in the last week. You know, I've been sharing photos with a couple of Facebook table hockey groups for like the entire time I've been building it. You know, everybody's like, hey, that's cool. And then like a week and a half ago, a Hockey Beast picked it up and it went nuts. So I've been doing all these appearances and, you know, podcasts and things. And it's like, you guys haven't even seen what it's really going to look like in the end. So it gets better.
Now you're just teasing it up, buddy.
I'm sorry, man. I just finished the score clock last night, actually, and it's going to blow people's minds.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, sneak peek. No, I'm just kidding. I actually, that was one of the questions I wanted to ask you, because there are so many questions, like Mark said, and I know for the last like week or two, you've just been answering the same questions or whatever. So we're trying to make it a little different. So I have one last like kind of serious question I'll go to Mark, but then I'd also like to maybe talk to you about being a Bruins fan outside of Boston, because that's an interesting thing. But I guess, like you said, it just blew up like all of a sudden. Here's Trent everywhere, the hockey world, like Bruins fans were like, oh my God, it's like you brought our like Christmas game early or whatever kind of thing. But how has the response been? And you can be honest, because we know Bruins fans can be brutal. They'll be like, oh my God, that's a 45 degree angle and it was supposed to be 47. No, just
kidding. It's been great. Actually, the best part has been all the people that, you know, spent time there and grew up there and just seeing their reactions, you know, like, lots of people have been reaching out to me, and it really is, it's really something. Like, you know, people are like, they can't believe I wasn't there, like, honestly, right? I mean, I've had people like, you know, just picking details of like the glossy paint on the walls in the hallway. Like, are you sure you were never there? Just stuff like that. And it's really great. And it's been like nonstop, especially this past couple of weeks. Like, I haven't had a break.
Yeah. Well, I was laughing because you said a guy with a luchador mask had sent you a picture to make himself a figurine. And I was laughing because Bruins luchador is Bruins luchador. And we're like, of course he's going to end up in the table hockey game. But that's funny. I'm like, oh, he's talked to the Bruins luchador, I think. Yes. So I'm just saying, if you want to, you can put us in there too. No,
just for the record, I think he's actually the sixth person that's asked to be in it. So,
nice.
Had a good look at you guys now. So
yeah. And this will be up on YouTube, so you can do a like a still frame, and you know, do it up good. You can add, make that list to 8. Just saying.
There you go. Oh, it's been really cool.
Yeah.
What is it like now being a Bruins fan? Now that there are the Flames have moved up there from Atlanta, and the Oilers have their, you know, and have gone through some dynasties, and obviously Vancouver, and what you will. Now even the Jets are back.
I'm definitely alone. But I mean, like I said, I grew up in Calgary. And so I think I was 12 when the Flames came to town. So, you know, I was a little kid. I was like, I was into it. All right, here's the team. Fine. Right. I mean, Bruins are still my guys, but I cheered for them. And which kind of, you know, back in those days, I mean, that's when the Oilers were just killing it. Right. And I'd be watching a Flames game. They'd be up, you know, 5-2 going into the third period and lose 7-5. You know, so I don't want to say hatred, but, you know, my frustration with the Oilers was there. And then I'd actually moved back with my parents to Saskatchewan for a little while in 87, 88 during that playoff run. And so I got to see lots of Bruins because they made the run, because in Canada, you don't see them a lot, right? So I really fell in love with them again, because I love those Terry O'Reilly coach teams in the late 80s. That's my kind of hockey, right? And so that's really stuck with me. And I mean, 2011, I was like through the moon. I got to actually see them win the cup. Fantastic. And I still, I don't miss them when they come to town. So that's great too.
Nice.
That's the one game I go to a year.
Where were you when we hoisted the cup? I know exactly where I was and what I was doing. Where were you?
I have a picture. I was in my living room. I think I have a picture of me standing in front of the TV like this.
That's awesome.
Yeah, no, it was great. I loved it. That was a good team too.
Oh yeah.
Trent, going back to the construction of the rink, I know that you said on the interview with the Edmonton Journal that you spent 12 hours a day on the weekends, and sometimes a little bit at night because you do have a work schedule and so on. It's the time and dedication is just amazing. But and I know you said that you don't exactly know the hours because you'd be afraid to learn how much time you've actually put in. But yeah. Just tell us the process and how much time and you know, just going along with it. I don't know where I'm going with this, but just sorry, I got a little tongue tied there.
No, that's good. Well, like I said, like with no plans at all, right? I was just kind of like, I started by just, I cut the slot pattern, you know, and I had to map that all out, make sure all the players could still bump into each other. I didn't want it, you know, I wanted it to be a good playable game. I didn't want it just to be a model in the room, right? So I spent a ton of time working on that. And then I think I did the boards and the glass next and got that all up. And because I built it into a table, I knew I was going to put the building around it. So I'd sort of worked out how big everything was going to be. But I spend an awful lot of time planning. So a lot of those 12 hours on the weekend is probably me just daydreaming, sitting on the couch going, how am I going to get that one balcony just the right pitch, you know, stuff like that. And because it's all hand done work, I mean, I'll paint something and I leave it to dry, and I'm including those hours as well, right? So I know now to do another one, I've got it all dialed in now. It'll be so much faster if I go to do another one next. And that's part of the problem too, is I started doing these commissions for other people and learned better ways to do it, that I actually look back at this and went, you know, I could do that whole lower section of this game better. And then I stopped myself. So I'm gonna keep going there.
That's awesome. Trial by error. Exactly. Yes. Love it. All right, Heather, do you have anything else?
I just had more of, I know that you've been in it, but it's interesting to talk to another fan outside of here. So I actually wanted to know, one of the running questions in the Bruins fan case is Tuukka awesome or do we all hate Tuukka? I was just wondering what side of the camp you fell on. Is Tuukka elite or needs to go?
Jeez, I don't know. I like Tuukka. That was weird, the whole taking off, you know, during the bubble stuff, but I sort of get it too, you know? So I didn't think anything bad of him. I still like Tuukka. Yeah, I don't have a problem there.
Yeah. I'm asking because these are questions that at least in Boston proper fans are always mad or arguing about. So I guess I'd also ask you, do you know what the Meth Bear logo is? Like, you know, the scaries. From like the 90s.
Do you remember the jerseys of the 80s and 90s when the bear was
on
the shoulder? Yeah, they call it the Meth Bear because he's got like weird eyes and so on.
Okay, because that's my favorite Bruins jersey, and those crests are my favorite part. And if you want to hear really how crazy I am, I bought a home white Bruins jersey in the 80s, and the only one I could get, because I'm in Canada, didn't have that. And so, believe it or not, I've had some free time way back when, and I embroidered those crests onto my jersey myself.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Solidly in Meth Bear's camp. We are not so much. So now I have a question for you. Sure. Okay on the crest on the shoulders, but what would you think as the center of the jersey? You really love those jerseys?
You know what? I have a t-shirt with that in the center. Right. Yeah. I never really thought, but like, it's crazy. I didn't know that was the Meth Bear, but I love the Meth Bear.
Yeah. Luchador has a sweater one.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, you see him up there doing the rally towel at the games, getting the freaking crowd going on the Jumbotron. Nice.
Okay, well, in case you didn't know, then we'd also like to share with you the sleepy-looking, not scary bear on the yellow jerseys is called Pooh Bear. That's how we refer it. So,
the Pooh Bear one.
You like the Pooh Bear? Okay, so that's the thing. I know, I just wanted to ask you some fun questions, too, as the Bruins. Sure. Fan. And I would like to just ask you my poll I took a couple weeks ago. Who do Bruins fans hate the most? Tuukka, the Bruins, other Bruins fans, or Ulf Samuelsson? What's your choice, sir?
I'm going to have to go with Ulf Samuelsson.
You pass. You're part of it. We're not kicking you off this island, my friend. You pass the test. Oh, I'm so glad you joined us today. Mark, do you have anything else that you just...
Yeah, well, I just got one more question related to the potential upcoming season with the air quotes for the audio listeners. Thoughts on the moves or lack thereof this season? And how can you compare last year's team that seemingly did okay in the bubble, not great, but and what's your expectations for a 2021 campaign?
I don't know. I'm wondering about defense with no Krug. That's a little concerning to me. I do like a lot of the Bruins defense. I know Miller's supposed to be coming back, possibly. I'm not sure whatever happened with that guy. But
well, they signed him. They signed him, yeah. And he's healthy enough to participate. So
yeah.
He's got at least one more year under his belt.
Well, he's not going to replace Krug anyways.
No.
But who else went? Nordstrom, too. Did he not go somewhere?
Calgary.
Yeah. I liked him, too. He was a great, good penalty killer guy. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't, with this whole, the way the world is right now, I haven't even really been paying super close attention because, is it happening? Is it not happening? No?
Well, they're talking about an early January. That's what they're saying. But Gary Bettman's also said that early January, there will be fans in the stands. I don't know what that guy's smoking, but... That's just a little. That's a little crazy expectation. But without fans in the stands, I can see an early to mid January return, with a 48-60 game schedule, and not to interfere so far into the summer when the 2021 Summer Olympics are going to happen, and that TV time is all going to be generated or navigated over to that. I think a shortened season is going to happen, but yeah. Remains to be seen when they're going to start because. Every day now is just it's a pressure situation for the team, the leagues to get done because a lot of the European players, the Bruins and the rest of the league, they're at home. So they'd have to do a 2-week mandatory quarantine when they get here. So planning your preseason and your all your workouts has to get done as soon as possible.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, it's pretty weird.
Yeah, well, 2020 is just a big kick in the nuts anyway, so.
It's totally weird how he's like, with fans in the stands, I'm like, where? In Dallas? Because most other places, north and south of the border, there are no fans, not at football games, or there's bare minimum. And okay, some places maybe you can have that, but come on.
Yeah.
Let's just work on can we safely get them to work and back. Worrying about whether we can be there with them, because we can watch them on TV. It's called remote viewing. It's like Zoom, but just how you used to watch sports. Just
exactly.
I don't know. That's it for me, I guess. I don't really, I wish we could talk more and more about the details and whatever. I do want to say when I saw the Bay Bank on the boards, it's funny. It just had me thinking of like, oh man, it just feels like it was so long ago. It was so long ago, but it really wasn't that long ago before it. Again, I just really want to thank you for, as a Bruins fan, starting with this one first, and maybe you'll make a second one. Like you said, you've learned things a long way, but don't stop this one. We want to see the product first.
I know. I got to finish it.
Yeah. We'll definitely have you back on when the finished product is all set and done. We see pictures and video of that. We'll definitely invite you on to get an update if you're willing to join us again.
Oh, absolutely. For sure.
Awesome.
Actually, I agreed to do a podcast a couple months ago and it was, Montreal Canadiens podcast.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and I remember I was kind of disappointed going, I really wasn't expecting this, but it fell through. So besides if I would have did it, maybe you guys wouldn't have had me on.
Oh, no. I had you on so we can talk about how you didn't totally want to, don't even get me started. Canadiens, I fought a whole room of them at fours once. They're just, let us know, because if you do get on a podcast with a bunch of Montreal Canadian fans, I'll be interested to be hearing.
Yeah, we'll listen for sure. Trent, do me a favor and plug anything that you'd like, your Twitter, your Facebook, a website, anything you want.
Most of my work is on my Instagram, Old Time Table Hockey.
Nice. Awesome. Trent, thank you very much for the time today. Thank you for your dedication to Boston fans and the project that you did. Not only gratifying for yourself, but dude, you really reached out to a huge, huge following here in New England, man. And I'm just so happy that you had the opportunity to join us and talk about it today on the Black and Gold Hockey Podcast.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me, guys. Really appreciate it.
Take care and be safe, and best wishes to your family.
All right.
There's a lot of people with disabilities that can't just go and find a job.
So we set out to create a business to fill those needs, one stick at a time. Store Next Door Gift Shop is a Yarmouth-based manufacturer and retail outlet store. So we make great ideas that any of our employees come up with, and we reuse and recycle as much as possible. Our most popular item is probably our hockey furniture. And we take broken hockey sticks and turn them into different products. We go through a lot of hockey sticks. A lot. A whole lot. Considering that it's only been a year and we're shipping internationally, I think that that's been a huge success. Most people's reactions are, wow, you do this here? We don't accept can't here. Everyone here learns in different ways, but we want to give everybody every opportunity to find exactly what works for them. There's nothing better than when a customer buys something and then one of our employees say, I made that. They have meaningful lives and build things they can be proud of and get a paycheck for it. I'm Amy Acker, and we change lives one job at a time.
Hey, Bruins fans, we're back, and I just heard from the great folks at the StoreNextDoor.ca, a great Yarmouth, Nova Scotia company. Please support them. Used hockey sticks becoming furniture and other great items around the house, so go check them out. StoreNextDoor.ca on the website and order some fantastic stuff. But speaking of fantastic, right before we heard from the folks at, from the Store Next Door, we had that interview with Trent Bueller, the creator of the Boston Garden freaking table hockey game. And let me tell you, that was a lot of fun hearing from him. And so thanks so much to Trent for the time today, because he is in Edmonton and is 3 hours behind, as Heather mentioned before the break. But I just had so much fun.
He did too. It was really great. I'm glad he gave us our time. I mean, he's talking to everybody and
very busy guy.
Yeah, very thankful that he gave us just, you know, 20 minutes, 25 minutes of his time, and hopefully we'll talk to him again soon.
Absolutely. Oh. Definitely have him on again.
All right. Well, we'll do what Matt would want us to do right now. One, he'd want me to be more focused. That's why he is in charge. Two, we're going to go with whatever happened to Matt's poll from last week, as he is not here to give us an update in case any inquiring minds. As a reminder, his thing was Bruins fans, who is your Bruins whipping boy? And he put on there Tuukka Rask, David Krejci, Jeremy Jacobs, and Zdeno Chara. And once again, Tuukka is number two. You're number two. You're number two. Because Bruins fans, just like Ulf Samuelsson, actually, they proportionately hate Jeremy Jacobs more than Ulf Samuelsson.
Shocker.
I'll just say 55% on mine. But 65%, Jeremy Jacobs, always and forever, will be the hate. We won't even see him for like years and years, and he will still be the reason that we are mad as fans. So I'm glad that Chara and Krejci only got a small percent. 25% for Tuukka is accepted. Like 25% of this fan base is always going to vote
Tuukka
first.
I'm actually surprised it wasn't higher.
Yeah, well, Jeremy Jacobs is in there. Just like when I threw in Ulf Samuelsson, this was a test. This is a test. But yeah, only 2% for Chara and 8% for Krejci. And again, I don't know how even 8% of you, I don't understand not loving Krejci. I just don't. Okay, well, we're going to move on from that. And we're going to, I'm sorry, Mark, I don't mean to bring up Tory Krug, but it's not my fault, because this week something so awesome happened, and you know it, right?
This was my addition to the agenda, madam.
I know.
So
I was happy because I went to put it on, and I was like, oh, good, Mark already put it on, because I didn't want to. On one hand, I know he knows it's awesome. On the other hand, he probably doesn't want to give me any opportunity to ever have Tory Krug work. I have the letter. I don't want to read the whole letter. If you did not, it's very easy to look up if you did not actually read the letter. But this week, Tory Krug sent his buddy Liam, as we all know, fist bump kid, a Tory Krug jersey from St. Louis. And basically, I love you. Here's some memories about them together. I thought it was hilarious when he said, do you remember when Adam McQuaid was my defense partner? And like, just little things. And he, Liam, if you don't know who Liam is, but he is a cancer survivor. And he is the unofficial, just like extra member of this team. He is always like just his spirit, and he is very beloved by this team and this fan base. And it was nice because him and Tory Krug have a special bond. So I don't really want to read all of it, but he basically is like, nice letter to Liam. Look it up if you want to, because I don't want to cry, because it would be hard to actually
Thank
read
you.
The letter. But Mark, you got to be honest. I mean, said just the end of it, he says, so before I go, I just wanted to say I love you, dude. So that sums it up. I'm gonna cry. It was awesome. Go ahead.
All right. So yeah, it was just an unbelievable moment, and good for that kid, because you know, he's just an inspiration. And also mentioned that when these guys are together next time, whenever that happens, that he's going to sign the jersey too. So, which is very cool. So good on Tory Crew to keep the friendship going. It's actions like this from these guys that make every day so much easier for somebody that's either been through a tough situation or going through a tough situation currently. So, it just speaks so much volumes to how these people think and with their hearts above their contracts and their pay and their, you know, overall status in society, whether it be sports or not. So, it's a heart-wrenching moment and we need more of that and to keep it going. Right. I believe this is a great, the game of hockey is such an ambassador to so many things, good, whether it be cancer, whether it be children's hospitals or you know, anything like that. It's just a constant respect, that I see, on the regular. So keep it going. Even during tough times like this, these guys are finding ways to reach out and you know, make somebody's day. So,
yeah. Well, that's what I was going to say, is that it shows that it's more than them, just like you said, doing what they're contractually obligated to do. You find friends and you can make friends, and sometimes you never would ever cross paths with someone, you know, and sometimes just little moments like Tori was saying, he remembers the first time they were all meeting, he's giving them, and Greg Campbell hurt his hand, he fist bumped him so hard. That was, you know what I mean? Like, it shows that these athletes, like Chara, we were talking about making sure that what he's done and he wants to do, he gets done. It's nice that it's reassuring to Liam that, you know what I mean? It's not just because you were Bruin, you were here, but like real bonds through the charities and through, you know, whatever, even just the youth sport league things and this and that, really, really, they take the time to really get to know, and they, you know, whether it's for a moment or a lifetime of friendship like this. And it's great. And just another reason why the Bruins are awesome and St. Louis, you're lucky to have Tory, because he is going to be great for your community. And Liam, just awesome. I mean, I don't want to wear it in St. Louis, but like the St. Louis logo, but I love that your friendship is that important to both of you that we all got to be a little part of it this week.
Exactly.
Okay. That being said, that from something good, heart-wrenching, to something not good, heart-wrenching, is HL and the NHL. We're still kind of, I don't know, just thoughts. What's going on? Is the HL happening? Is the NHL happening? Just
the a lot of the stuff that I've been reading in the past couple of days, from Patrick Williams and David Foote, listening to that podcast and the articles that have been coming out, especially one from Sportsnet, concerning the AHL. The American Hockey League is going to need a lot of support from the NHL to make anything happen, because these guys aren't going to get the asses in the seats for their businesses to make any money. So, this is really not a good move forward. The minor pro leagues have said that they want to come back right around the beginning of February. I know the AHL was targeting a February 5th date, but they were also targeting a December 4th date too, which got pushed back because numbers were increasingly getting higher. And they continue to get higher. So I'm not sure how the landscape in February is going to make anything easier. We're still in cold and flu month, so I think that the AHL is basically reaching out saying that a little less than half of our teams who aren't owned by the parent clubs are going to struggle, and the Providence Bruins are one of those. The Boston Bruins do not own the Providence Bruins. They are just an affiliate. That's it. So they are one of 12 teams that don't have any support from the higher NHL team. So I've been talking about this for the last 2 or 3 weeks, because it continues to be a daily subject or things are changing. But the idea that the AHL wants is, and the NHL, I believe, is to do these divisions, which are close. We talked about all the teams that are in the Northeast Division, and there's going to be a Canadian freaking division, and then a Western and Central. but is to have your AHL clubs follow around. And if you do that, if you kind of like do an NHL and an AHL minor pro like bubble, and you're constantly moving all the way around, clean stations, you know, wherever hotels you go, automatically cleaned ahead of time and so on. If you do that, that just costs money that the NHL franchises have to spend. I know I said it on Sportscaster the other night. The Winnipeg Jets made $8 billion in the pandemic time. Well, Jeremy Jacobs has not. So I don't see how the Boston Bruins, who are struggling right now, not only as an organization, not on the ice, but as a freaking company, are going to be able to support a lower level team by doubling the amount of money that you're going to have to do to get them out there and play and develop and continue that way. So I'm at the corner. I'm in the corner right now, fighting like a scared cat. I don't want the AHL to go away, but with the TV revenues and so on, the NHL has a better chance of sustainability that way because of the TV and advertising. While the AHL doesn't get a ton of TV time, is probably going to be the league that's going to be closing up. I freaking hate saying that. I don't have any solid facts that they're going to close up, but it's just leaning that way.
Yeah. If anything, it would be this season for a regroup and something like it may, you know, but you don't want it to get that far. It is interesting, though, because certain teams, I don't know, it's like you can't really force teams that haven't been hit to give up too much money extra because all the clubs are already going to have the extra burden of having to sharing the testing and the whatever, or however form in the AHL or NHL or any of the leagues for that matter, how to get it done, right? It's just financially the NHL, it's not, if they were the NFL, it would not be an issue for them to carry the AHL for this whatever 2000 and let's call it the 2021 season, because that's really what it is, right?
Yeah, that's what it's coming down to.
Yeah, so it's like, it's so hard because it's like everything's a ripple effect, right? Like everybody who works there and everybody who plays in these leagues, you know, like it's bigger than just the money revenue if they can play this year. It's what this could fundamentally change North American hockey in just the way it operates, because it's not just the big leagues like the NHL and the AHL. We've talked about the ECHL, you know, Hugh and them, they're doing what they're trying to do or not do or whatever. We've talked about how college hockey is kind of, it depends on where you are. And we were talking like we have a whole division of hockey right now that can't even travel to each other's states, which is
right.
Kind of, you know, it breaks my heart. But at the same time, it's like they're gonna have to figure it out. Because like the Bruins and every team, they need somewhere to put their prospects and their whatever. And even if it doesn't fully open like the way, maybe there's a way to tweak sponsorship so that maybe you can get them more airtime. You know what I mean? More television time, which we've talked about forever of like,
yeah.
If the Providence Bruins were on more, I'd watch, you know what I mean? Like they were just on TV, you know, I'd stop and watch it, but I'm not, you know.
If the AHL does not happen, they'll have to go with like the Black Aces scenario when they can carry up to 12 players along with them. I mean, that's the only thing that'll work, but it will also put a lot of people out of work that are on AHL contracts and so on. So it's just it's a nasty situation no matter what you think about it.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, with the Black Aces thing, it's hard to tell that because if the NHL is trying to start in January, say they start January 25th when the NWHL tournament thing's all going to start, probably the girls, you know, the women are going to start playing their league. That's their target. They obviously have a bubble. We'll talk about that later. But the AHL is not even talking till February. You still have all the training camps, and in between, you got to figure out where you can put all the people because they're only going to let so many people in the rinks, arenas, wherever. You're going to have five sessions a day to keep all 55 people that, like, at least we're lucky enough that Providence is only an hour away from Boston. Some of these teams, clubs aren't right next to them. And
No. We
talk about this all the time with the travel, you know? I don't know. It just, especially the teams that I understand not asking the teams who do own their affiliate to have to do the burden of other people's teams. But in this case, the teams who are the affiliates, you know, big club like the Bruins are going to have to the best of their ability, try to help the lower ones stay afloat. And that's all you can do. But it's just hard to make the decision, say, contractually, like, oh, we'll let you carry so many Black Aces to remedy that, when you don't know when they're going to get called back to their own. What are you talking? Say you write it in, you're thinking it's going to be a month before they start, and you're like, oh, for the first 2 months or whatever, you can have X amount of players. And then after game 40, you can only have X amount of players.
Right.
You have no guarantee, because either way, like you said, you may be looking at people who have been sort of playing or at least practicing at a higher level like they should be in their professional career. But now they don't have anywhere to go either, because none of the other leagues ever opened up. So that's almost like, I don't know. It's just, it's a Pandora's box of hot mess from the top to the bottom, even on youth hockey levels. Like, it is not doing good things to the sport of hockey financially, in the big business sense. And I hope they can save the AHL, because I mean, things like the ECHL may go under, but something like them will replace themselves, like that level minor pro. But it's a lot harder to restart a Providence Bruins or, you know, whatever, Maine or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So that's it. I don't know. I don't know why I went on a particular rant about that. It's just, I'm frantic because I don't know what to do. I'm like, it's all coming down. It's a apocalypse. The whole world was, for all our smarts, we were all taken down by a virus and our inability to go to sporting events in North America. We love our sports in North America. Even yesterday, I was watching, I know you don't like football, but like Auburn football was on, my aunt loves them. And it's like, they normally have 100,000 people there every single weekend. There's like, whatever, 25,000, which is a lot of people, but not in a giant stadium that holds 100,000. Like, I don't know. All right. So I guess we're moving on from that. That being said, because no one knows what the heck's going on, I feel like there's conflicting messages. Some clubs are like, hey, come back from Europe. Right. And then like, start your process. And other clubs are like, oh man, we're going to send you to Europe because we need something to do with you a little. So that being said, I feel like more of our maybe future Black Aces or Providence Bruins or Boston Bruins, we've got Vladar and Backenainen are now loaned out. They've gone back. I think Backenainen had a goal the other day, I thought.
Yeah, his first game.
Yeah, so I just didn't know if you had anything particular you wanted to hit on about not just Dan Ladesh or your Backenainen, but like seeing some of our potential Boston Bruins next year. How they've been doing overseas? Have you seen any updates? No pressure if you don't.
No. I've been paying close attention to a lot of players over there. Like Victor Berglund's been playing well, but there's a lot of other players that have taken like kind of a downward spiral. Almost like they're getting comfortable now, and like the big flash of being over there for the first, well, not the first time, but you know, to start the year, is gone. But Lantoshi's playing well. There's just a lot of good players over there, but it's so hard to judge because these leagues are so lower than the AHL. So, you know, you could be a star over there as an AHL player, but when you come back over here, it's really what you got to do to continue to work. But
I guess my question on that for you is: do you feel at least where they have landed? Like, we talked some of the top, you know, Swiss league, whatever this, that, the Finnish leagues, this. Do you think the club is at least doing the best they can to not let some of these high-end people that we are supposed to be our future Bruins fall apart during this crazy time? Because it's been almost a year for these athletes of this craziness of can't skate here, can skate there, what you can do, not do.
Right.
Fans, no fans, playing, not playing. So
no.
Just, do you think the team's got their back?
Yeah, I believe so. But it's availability, too. These teams are... I can't accept David Krejci or Bergeron and so on. We're not getting to that extreme. They are young enough to go back to their home countries and play. So it's just to keep them sharp and so on. But in a group, if you have a certain section of people that are able to go and play, send them over, you know. But as soon as training camp starts, every one of them, except for Peter Solarik, will be coming back for training camp. So they're not staying over there permanently. Everyone's on loan except for Peter Solarik.
Yeah. So. Well, I think my That's what I mean, though, is I feel it's like kind of a, like we're leaving people there, but also calling people home. It's like, when is the right call to do that? Because if it doesn't happen,
yeah,
it's better to leave them there as long as they can. If they can get a full season, even if it's in a league five steps down, I mean, at least they're skating every day and having some kind of competitive, the repetitions of like real, you know, people can do drills all day long. It doesn't matter what sport or whatever you do, you know, it could be baking, could be whatever, but like, you need the repetition, dance, music, whatever it is, in this case, ice hockey. So I just wanted to make sure that, you know, think those kids might be all right. And honestly, Peter Solarik, I don't care if you don't show up for training camp. That's just
I don't think he will be here. He's a contract.
Okay, you had put on here, so I'll just throw it to you, about the NHL free agents that we as a team could theoretically be able to get. I'm sorry, I don't know why I can't talk today. Sorry, that's why we have Matt. I mean, are we still on the Hoffman train? Because
No, it's not that. It's Logan Mullen of Nesson wrote an article about the some ideas that you can have with the cap space that you have now with Jake DeVos signed. So you have a little around $3 million. So, I mean, one of them that I did remember was like a Michael Granlund. You take a chance on that. Or with the cap space, you take a chance on Ilya Kovalchuk. He had that name in there. I don't want to go that far. But, you know, there are some players out there that can help. But more or less right now, for me, I think that the idea that Logan's pulling out there is probably one that's cheap enough that you're going to be pushing some of these young players for jobs. Much like how Brett Ritchie did last summer when he was signed as a free agent to a one-year deal and pretty much ended up in Providence for the rest. But the idea of we're going to sign this guy because he's got NHL experience, and if you can't cut the roster, then, you know, he's got the job. So it's pretty much like situations like that because there is a little bit of free availability on the cap. The Bruins are a team that spends at the cap, and I don't think the pandemic or anything like that is going to have anything to do with it. I think they have a budget and so on that they stick to, and they still want to be competitive regardless. So I don't know. I mean, just it was an interesting article just to say, you know, I mean, it probably won't happen. They probably want to have that $2 to $3 million wiggle room coming up to the trade deadline. So anything could happen, but no, I thought it was an interesting article that Logan wrote and just the research that he did on what could come this way with the cap flexibility that the Bruins currently have.
Well, I admit that I did not actually read the article, so sorry I couldn't help you remember some of the names, I was going to click on it.
Something's going on with the computer over here, and I can't pull up links right now, so hopefully this is being recorded and so on, because I'll lose my shit if it doesn't.
I apologize, because he is a great writer, and I really normally would just fly through the article. I just didn't quite read to it. I was thinking Mark will be ready, but then, of course, technology every time we try to do anything.
All the time.
All right. So we talked about that. The NWHL they are coming back. There's going to be a bubble at Lake Placid, New York, storied USA. All the teams are going to be there. So Toronto's going to be with them, which is great. That it's nice that they're letting the Toronto Six in their inaugural year come across the border and participate in their first season and not have to look via Zoom and watch the games or whatever craziness might happen. But I believe each team's playing 5 games and then they're going to do play for the cup. And that being said, if anything, at least we know one league has a solid plan in which that they are coming back in North America to play hockey. And it's a great league. I think they're on Twitch is where you can watch their games on.
Yeah. I haven't gotten any clarity on exactly what platform they're going to be on, but they were on Twitch last year and through the Isabel Cup playoffs until the very end when they couldn't finish the cup because of the pandemic, obviously. But it was with the Boston Pride, who had the best record in Boston. They were the best professional team in Boston, hands down, with that record of like 21-1. It was just an absolute crazy season. So it's really good that these ladies are going to get back on the ice in a situation like this. I think Lake Placid is a very good bubble area for the programs, not only travel wise. I mean, the Buttes, the Boston Pride, And, you know, why not give a Canadian team a chance, the new one in Toronto, to come over the border as much the NHL did on the return to play over in Canada. So when they did the bubble systems in Toronto and Edmonton, why not give the opportunity to the ladies, too, to get over here, get some work in, at least get the season in, and do it safely. So I'm pumped. I can't wait to watch the Boston Pride in these regular season games and a tournament coming up.
Yeah, and that's what it'll be fun because it's like not a whole on tournament. It's kind of like the tournament and the tournament, you know, kind of thing. But we'll have that kind of feeling of we did the summer when it was like just a couple games and you know. So it'll be awesome to see the ladies back out there. And here's to getting another band up at Logan. Go Pride. I was also thinking logistically, one thing about the NWHL teams that they put them in the bubble, which is the smartest thing. And it's a great backdrop to really draw attention and market. You know what I mean? Like market, USA, market Canada, you know, USA, Hockey Canada, the ladies sport, whatever you want. I mean, it's just, you don't even have to do that. It says so much. Lake Placid says so much about the sport of hockey and having these women here. It's like a backdrop of a perfect setting of how great moments are made or where great moments are made. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And it should be super fun. That's all I want to say about that. Okay. We talked about Torrey Krug earlier in the show, and Liam misses Torrey Krug and I miss Torrey Krug. And so does Brad Marchand, I think, because now he chirps himself on like Instagram and Twitter. And I only am bringing it up because it's hilarious. I just like the one reply that just sums it up. So he basically chirped himself about, he said, it's like when you leave the house, it was that same picture we talked about with the Bruins TikTok and he misses it. You know, but what is it? And this guy had said to him, imagine 16,000 people are watching the most embarrassing moment of your professional career. Sorry for losing your pride in that moment, Brad. And he said, imagine 16,000 people were ever watching you do anything, beat it, pigeon. So I just wanted to say, don't chirp with Marchand if you don't want to get chirped back. This guy, first of all, that is not his most embarrassing moment. He has literally lost two Stanley, no offense, Brad, I don't want you to get upset if you hear this. You lost two Stanley Cups and have been videotaped licking another grown man. That is not the most embarrassing moment of your career, I can
assure you. He'll probably hear it because we got a review from Patrice Bergeron that says that he's going to be sharing the show with his teammates. Did you see that review?
I have not been to look at the reviews, admittedly. Yeah, I was gonna
go look
at
the review. It's pretty funny. I don't think it's Patrice Bergeron, but it says Patrice Bergeron, and he's going to share the podcast with his teammates because he loves it. He thinks the knowledge is spot on, and we're right about everything. So I think we're getting trolled from somebody, but to be honest with you, it was kind of funny.
Yes, well, if I'm going to be trolled, I want it to be someone who's going to pretend to be Patrice Bergeron. It's better than getting trolled by my enemy.
Exactly.
I don't care. Like, you know it is. I'll look. And you know me, I'll read them all. The trolls, the lovers, the haters, the satirical comments. I don't care. But that being said, if it was Bergeron, well, great. That'd be awesome if you could share it with your teammates because that would be
And he gave us five stars, so even better.
Hey, as long as they gave us five stars, that's all I care
exactly.
about. No, I'm just kidding. I don't care. Like we said, give us a 2-star. We just want to know. Tell us how you feel. We just want you to know. Speaking of that, make sure you go and rate and review the Black and Gold Hockey Podcast 205 after you're done finishing listening to this.
Exactly.
Okay. So we don't have that much more to go. I feel kind of weird without Matt here and his, like, you know, just spaz it up a little bit. But I did want to make mention that Fred Saskamoose passed away this week. He was the first Indigenous NHL player. He was a very important to the Indigenous community in like Alberta and Saskatchewan and that area. And he played, I believe, the Chicago Blackhawks, but just like Willie O'Ree, being a minority player in a league in the early 50s in the United States is not an easy task. But he seems to be loved and mourned, and obviously we don't recognize our Indigenous heroes in North America, not north or south of the border as of we should. And I think I would be remiss if I didn't say our thoughts are with family, friends, and his community, because that's a big deal. And he led the way for others to come after him, as so many trailblazers do. And like I said, just watching the outpouring of love from people on hockey. And I just wanted to mention it before we start wrapping up like the hockey talk. All right. Well, that being said, why don't we do the hashtag AskBNGs?
Yeah, buddy. Let's do it.
We got a couple. Sorry. I feel like we've gone dark. Ooh, okay. Stay focused. We got this. Okay. I'm sorry. I just want to make sure I don't miss anyone. So start at the beginning. When you get to the end, stop. Okay. So Chris Blackie at Chris_Blackie, our friend dying the Craichy Hill together, asks, what is the plan with John Moore going forward?
John Moore needs 40 games to be able to move in the expansion draft. So that's probably where we're going to stick. He's probably going to be with the team for the remainder of his contract, because I don't, unless they buy him out. And they should have done that when they had the buyout window. I don't know. I believe that the Boston Bruins have explored options to move him and even maybe package him. I don't think that other teams were that interested in him. He's very serviceable and so on, but in these cap times, that his dollar value is needed elsewhere in internal stuff like that with throughout the organizations in the NHL. So I just don't see a heavy market for him. And so many people just say, oh, you want to save money, just trade more. It's not that easy. If you don't have a trade partner, you just can't get rid of that money.
Yeah. I think part of it is right now we're just sitting on more because God knows we don't know what will happen with Kevin Miller if and when he does come back, right? And also we're not sure what the kids who might make the team and not make the team. And then I think John Moore, because I don't think honestly as much as I'm starting to not think we're even going to get 40 games in for him to be eligible to maybe find a new home.
That's true.
So I think now going back and trying to move more is going to actually be more to the Bruins' advantage because of all the salary cap and the crap and all that. So more, I mean, he's not going to be a top two, but he is a guy, if someone gets injured, could certainly come into your lineup. And he is not that expensive. Who are we to judge? We just gave Kevin Miller $2.5 million and he hasn't even played hockey. At least
he's going to be a healthier Moore.
Right. So
I mean, a healthier Miller.
Right. He may or, but still, that's a lot of catch up to do with your peers. two years worth, you know, and again, it's not like he can do normal rehab baying back on the ice necessarily, depending on where he's located and if the sky is blue and if the moon is over there. No one knows. Every day changes.
Right.
That's what I think. And then I think at the trade deadline, they're going to package him and get rid of him somewhere. Because God knows we'll still be trying to get Krejci a right winger.
That's true.
That's how we do it every day, every time at the trade deadline. Hasn't worked out yet. Maybe we should try doing that in the offseason and see if it works out. Okay. Thank you, Chris. Okay, so Chris Fevens, is that how you, do you know him? Like that, think how you say it? Sorry, Bruins Fever One, or says, will next year be Tuukka's last year as in a Bruins uniform? I'm saying yes. That's what he says. He's saying yes. I didn't answer. I'm asking you.
I'm probably going to say yes. But probably would be an awesome idea to get him at least another year or two contract in case you just want to create a little bit of time for the development goalies to get some more time down the AHL. But this is the way things are lining up and all the news that's coming out and so on. I think he's going to obligate his last year and probably call it then.
I think Tuukka Rask is the same as David Krejci. Krejci might go and play. Tuukka will either retire or play. You know what I mean? David's either going to go home or play here probably another season. But I still hold to what I was saying earlier with, like, David Krejci might do 1 year extension just to go out with Bergeron and Tuukka. Although Bergeron is obviously, he's so weird. Even though Chara's older, Bergeron is our senior, you know, whatever, member of the squad. And maybe them all go, our core all ball out around the same exact time. You know what I mean? Yep. At least some of them are a little younger, but that's what I think. I think he will maybe one more year, but that's more to say what happens this year, because I think there's going to be a lot of players that are either on the fence about retirement. If things don't go off this year, like in a sort of normal fashion, even if fans aren't in the building, there's going to be a lot of people that it's like, you know what? Well, I mean, they're athletes, right? By the time you get to your 30, you're like, you're not an old man in the real world, but like, it's maybe not worth it. Maybe I'd rather go to my daughter's dance recital or, you know, whatever, my son's art show. Like, it's sometimes becoming a parent and a life partner, or just even living your life. Like, you know, maybe you never got married and had kids, but you just always wanted to go to Bali. I don't know. So I say yes. Okay. And Maria of Watertown, Maria of H2O Town, our friend and member of the family here. Is anyone besides me worried about the lack of progress between the NHL and NHLPA on the plans for an upcoming season? A January 1st start seems like it may not be realistic at this point.
I think it is a realistic point. The fans in the stands is not realistic. But the longer they wait is the thing. Is they have to get something in place sooner or later about the agreement that they made for the return to play and what they're going to do moving forward with the escrows and whatever that whole situation is. Hopefully it gets done, but the longer they wait, the more they're going to have to go back and possibly further into the middle of the month or even the end of the month. But hopefully something happens. So,
yeah, I am a little concerned about the lack of progress. And I wasn't until we've been hearing that nobody talked to each other for a week or so. That's a little concerning because the bigger issue is going to be coming back this time of year. The players usually get to have Christmas, you know, or like be at least playing closer. They try to let, you know, Pittsburgh and Philly be playing each other. So it's not a lot of travel or whatever. That does concern me. And like you said, I mean, the clock is on though. I'm not saying for the whole season, but like a January 1st start time, at this point, you're going to have them come in and have to do all their quarantining and all of that or whatever to their respective place. There's not even, at least before we knew they were going to maybe do bubbles and there was kind of an actual plan you could execute, that you're going to have people come back quarantine, whether they're out of state, out of country, or whatever. And you've got to have training camps because, again, these athletes have been going hot, cold, most of them, for almost the better part of a year, right? So right. We all know it's going to be probably sloppy hockey when it first comes back to some level, not, you know.
Right.
Not quite last year's level, but that. But it's like they do have to make a decision, though, because if they don't have a decision in the next 10 days, they can't start until at least February. And it's going to be a hard sell, especially when they're already kind of in a standstill on – escrow and like the need for them to retain more of the money, but the players like, screw, you just said we could have our money, you know, that situation they find themselves in. It's going to be a hard sell to get these players to miss the holidays with their families. And that means you either have to decide that they have to miss the holidays with their families so they can quarantine and do whatever that, or you have to not let them come back until January 1st. And now you're looking at around the 25th, like when the NWHL or even like we said, the AHL, their target date was like February 4th was their new target date. I don't know. It's a hard sell. I am concerned, but I don't think that January 1st is realistic, but I haven't ruled out starting in January being realistic, I guess. Sorry for the long, short answer. Thank you.
We are live.
All right. And we have one more from Ray Guarino. Thank you at Ray Guarino, who always has our back and a good question for us.
Sure
and
does.
He says, what do you think Cassidy will start at? Oh, sorry. Who do you think Cassidy will start at third left wing? I know fans want Bjork, but do you think Cassidy wants Richie there? There always seems to be a schism between who the fans want to play and who Cassidy wants to play. That is a great question.
It is actually a good question, and I'm actually really not sure if Nick Ritchie's going to be around. I don't know. I honestly don't know how much playing time that guy's going to get with some of the youth that's going to be pushing. So I don't know. It remains to be seen. I really don't have an honest answer for that. I like Bjork anywhere that he can go with his versatility, but I'm not a fan of the Richie at all. So sorry, Ray. I didn't come with this one. Good with this one.
I think what Cassidy wants on that third line is what Richie is supposed to represent, what we were supposed to be getting. But I think that Nick. Sorry, Brett.
Oh, I think
I did
too.
You've already been hammered by this fan base enough. I'm talking to you, Nick, the one that actually will probably skate. you better come hungry, kid. Because if you, now I'm willing to give Nick Ritchie and I'm willing to give Kasha another, I mean, really, it was a weird when you get traded to another team and then 3 weeks later, everything shut down and then you don't get to see a team again until a bubble, like, you know, or whatever. I'm willing to give them all a little bit more, but honestly, I don't like what I see with him. But that being said, he is young, and we always talk about sometimes people are young and, you know, like, so if he comes trim to camp and he looks like he's going to be able to use that size and weight the way he should, even some of the ways we talk about Charlie McAvoy using it, you know, just being a physical presence more. I don't need the stupid penalties though. Like if we're going to just fall because you're big and then you're just going to get a bunch of stupid penalties, I don't need that. I need that crazy, nice Nick Ritchie goal. Sorry, I don't need to keep doing that. But, you know, like when you're like, oh my God, he can score, you know what I mean? Kind of thing. That's what I need. Also, I'm looking at you, Kasha, on the backside of that, because I've been going to bat for you. So you better show me some magic if you end up on that second line with Krejci. That's all our ask B and G's. Anything else? I don't know. I feel like neither of us are on the top of our game. It's been a long thing. We had an exciting interview. We miss Matt because the reason we have him is so this doesn't, whatever's happening right now is not happening. Anything else, or do we want to start wrapping it up? Maybe do a little Patreon shout out?
Yeah, let's do a Patreon shout out. I want to say thank you to everybody who's financially contributing to our Patreon campaign. And for those members who are, there are some fantastic gifts that we're giving away, all Bruins related. We have stuff from Fanatics. We have t-shirts and hats and, it's just the store next door. They have some great stuff that we've bought from them up there. So we've donated to their cause, and, we have jerseys. We're going to be doing a jersey giveaway once a month, and we have 3 months, actually four. We have 4 months, but I only have 3 jerseys to show you. So, the first month of January is going to be a Anders Bjork signed jersey with a JSF authentication. What, I can't talk.
Authentication.
Yeah, whatever.
You got it.
The next is a Terry O'Reilly jersey signed, and The third is, can't see because of the stupid thing, Jerry Chivas. And on the way, we have a Charlie Coyle. Signed jersey, hand signed, and everything. So pretty pumped about that. Just $1. And please go to patreon.com/blackandgoldhockeypodcast and donate $1 per episode. And we're getting a lot of traction on that. I think in the past 2-3 weeks that we've gotten closer to whenever the season's going to start, we've gained probably 10 Patreons. It's absolutely crazy, and I love it. So keep them coming. And the more people that get involved, the more we're going to turn that cash around and help pay our out-of-pocket costs for operating everything B&G. But also, some of that money goes back into the pool as we create more opportunities to get more Bruins-related stuff out to our favorite people, the financial contributors. So please keep that up. It's an awesome thing. So that's it from that. I just want to say thank you to the listeners and the people that share on Facebook and Twitter, the retweets and the love and so on. We really appreciate it. We hope Matt gets better and back with us next week, so to get some kind of structure going on in this mess.
Yeah, I know. Sorry, Matt. We disappointed you. It's all right. No. Mad when he has this. I just wanted to say, make sure you follow Mark, myself, Matt, all the great writers, and members of the Black and Gold team. Everybody does amazing work. Whether it is the graphic designing and the designing of our webpage or whatever, and the great podcast and all the great articles going out. Please rate and review the show. Apple is probably the easiest way for me to find it, but we will scan and look for everywhere. Please help spread the news. There's not a lot of Bruins news going on, but we do always try to spread the hockey love and as much Bruins as we can, even if it's with silly things like a poll or something like that if we need to, which are actually good. It's good to get in the mind of a fan, because it's easy as a fan to think everything in your own mind. So yeah, please do that. Check out Mark on Sportscaster. Tuesday, are you with the Dump and Change Boys again?
Yep.
That being said, hashtag Movember. I'm pretty sure I know it's only people have about 24 hours between today when this gets released and tomorrow. But if you have not, if it's not even with the Dump and Change Boys, but don't forget Movember, help raise cancer awareness and money to help support causes along with that. And that's it. I guess I'll shut up. That's it, Matt. Sorry. sorry to the listeners. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So we'll end that right there. Thank you very much for listening. If you've made it this far, we really, truly appreciate it. And we'll be back next week for more Bruins Hockey Talk. We'll have hopefully some more things to talk about. It was great to hear DeBrus got signed and so on. So to get some relative news and updated news over the week. So thank you very much, everybody. We appreciate it. And peace out.
Thanks again for listening to and supporting the Black and Gold Hockey Podcast. Please share the show with your friends and family, and don't forget to subscribe to and leave a 5-star rating for the show on your favorite podcast platforms such as Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and SoundCloud. Between shows, help us keep the Bruins Talk going by visiting our website, blackandgoldhockey.com, by sending an email to blackandgoldhockeyblog@gmail.com, and by following the show on Twitter @blackandgoldpod.
Peace out.